This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
On Joy Now, Transpositions, a safe place for trans communities, our friends and our allies to share our experiences. We'll discuss our issues, our challenges and our successes. We'll occasionally make you cry and hopefully we'll educate and inspire you. Welcome to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
Good evening. You are listening to Transpositions. My name is Michelle.
And I'm Megan.
Hello, Megan.
Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing well, sweetheart. Now, welcome everybody. We are carrying on from... We had a bit of a back-to-school segment, didn't we?
We did.
This whole past month, it's been about having parents of young trans children. We've had a teenager come in with Safe Schools Coalition. That was a brilliant one we had last week. I loved that. And so what are we carrying on now with, Megan?
So what we're doing now is we're starting to look at what happens with a child when we need to start talking about hormone therapy, because obviously as we grow up, we go through this lovely thing called puberty. Yeah, and we had a great one, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we did.
It was great. So, but look, what we are doing is we're now looking at puberty with adolescent children, and we're looking at things from a medical perspective, and we're also looking at things also from a legal perspective as well. So with children wanting to access cross-sex hormone therapy at stage, what we call stage two, how does that work? What's the legal aspects associated with that? Also the development of a child as well. We want to get questions from you guys. So if you've got questions or comments and those kinds of things, please reach out to us, and this is how you can go about doing it.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair at joy.org.au or call us 1300-JOY-949.
So, yes, that's how you can reach out to us if you do have questions or comments. Also, if you've got your own child who is trans and you're trying to think about ways on how you can start to work through this. So this is a really important topic that we're talking about tonight, and I'm nervous about it, actually.
I am, too. This is that stage where you start getting those secondary characteristics and the things that, you know, me and myself, you know, transitioned later in life. So we're actually fighting against the things that our body actually had developed.
And facial hair,
and so
shoulders,
this actually, the children will actually not have to go through this and have to deal with any of this for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and it makes it a lot easier for the children to transition prior to puberty.
Less depression, less, you know, stress,
exactly.
Everything.
Great. So I've got a great track lined up for you guys to play right now. It's actually The Cure, Boys Don't Cry. So don't go away. We're going to come back with some news. So you are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. You are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9. My name is Michelle, and I think tonight, Mingzi, I'm going to have to go by Mish, because we got Mish. Another Michelle in the room.
We do have another Michelle in the room. So,
you know, it's Mish as normal.
But our two guests that we have in the studios with us tonight is Dr. Michelle Telfer from the Royal Children's Hospital. She is the acting head of department, I believe, for the Centre for Adolescent Health there at the Royal Children's Hospital. And we've also got Sally Nichols from Nichols Family Law. She's the head honcho. She's the partner.
Good evening, ladies, and welcome.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Now, what do we have now, Migsy?
So we're going to talk about our favourite thing we talk about this time every week. And
every week, it's the news. Now, ladies, if you do want to pipe in on anything, feel free. Now, I was quite surprised with some of the articles that were popping up in the Googles.
Okay.
So, now, we all know about the woman threatening to pull her kids from the high school who supports gender diversity. Now, it went a little bit further. The school is accused of controversial teachings that denied it told boy and which it denied that it told boys they could wear dresses and use female toilets. The mother said she was going to pull her children out of the high school and claimed the school was teaching dangerous and age inappropriate content about gender dysphoria. And I'm loving seeing the head shaking no in the room. Now, this high school, like many in Victoria, is part of the Safe Schools Coalition, which is designed to promote acceptance and tolerance of diverse people, including the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex community. And we had them on last week, and they Mel was absolutely amazing.
Mel was
wasn't she?
Gorgeous. She was just so nice, and also Sarah as well, our guest from last week, which is fantastic.
Which she transitioned within this group. So, now the principal said the school did not have any student that was openly transgender, and the school did not discuss sexual preferences with students. What they said was, "What we do at the school is accept all students and people, regardless of culture, origin, disabilities, and gender," he said. The Victorian government also mandated all schools to join the Safe Schools Coalition by 2018. Now, the mom went said she found the Safe Schools Coalition resources excessively sexual, which I looked at the articles that were sitting here in front of us. There was nothing sexual at all or any kind of content that was graphic or anything. It was all just a written document, which I'm completely surprised by. So
it seems quite strange.
And she's saying she doesn't think it's a necessary thing to encourage children to do. She said she had issues with the posters hanging around the school as if they were recruiting people to the LGBTI community.
Dare we say the gay agenda or something like that?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but to be honest, I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
You better get the conversion team in.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, couldn't help myself.
Good one, Sally. I like that.
Now, a spokesman for the Victorian Education Minister, James Merlino, said the Safe Schools Coalition was about promoting inclusion and understanding to make schools safer for everyone. Discrimination, harassment, and bullying have no place in Victorian schools, and it is up to all of us to establish a safe and exclusive learning environment for every one of our students. So, you know what? To the Safe Schools and to the Victorian Education Department, go for it. Give them a yes. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't have any booze.
Yeah, I'll give that to the mug.
Exactly.
Now, bit of a better one.
Good.
The Voice UK of 2016, they could be the first British talent show to have a transgender winner.
Yay.
With singer Jordan Gray tipped to go far. What they said was Jordan is thought to be the first openly trans contestant on a UK singing show.
Okay.
A show insider tells us Jordan is definitely one to watch. While there are others with a better voice, she is a great performer.
Well, performance is
we'll keep an eye on that one. So, The Voice UK, Jordan Gray. Everyone keep an eye on that one.
Yep, definitely. Well, guess what? Before we go.
Yep. Oh. There you go.
Yes.
Okay, now, look, this one probably is a little bit more long-winded, but it's worth reading completely out, okay? So, how South Dakota lawmakers candidly justify the anti-transgender bill they support. Now, they support several anti-LGBT bills and are swiftly advancing through the South Dakota legislature, two of which directly target transgender people for discrimination. Several lawmakers all defended their support for this bill that bans transgender students from using bathrooms that match their gender, which actually passed the House 58-10, which is quite sad. In doing so, they demonstrated various biases and misunderstandings about the transgender community. Now, the Rep. Stalzer offered the familiar myth that people with male anatomy going into female showers and locker rooms is somehow a threat to other women, defining individuals entirely by their anatomy. He suggested that transgender women are basically all male exhibitionists.
No.
Mm-hmm. And he said that, "I think we're protecting the young women in our South Dakota high schools," he said. "It is already a crime for a male to expose themselves in front of females, and they can call it she, he, whatever, but as long as they have male anatomy, they're in violation of that law, if nothing else."
So what happens to transgender boys?
Exactly. It's funny, they always focus on the trans women. There's never a discussion about trans
you
boys.
Never say that. Do you remember a little while ago, I think it was in Houston or Dallas or something like that, they had the what was it? There's the bathroom bills,
uh-huh.
And there was this big burly trans man.
Oh, I loved that one. Yeah, it was the viral thing.
Yeah, it went viral, and he went into the women's bathrooms and doing selfies.
He was a massive cowboy too.
He was huge,
and it was a trans man.
No, it was great.
No, but this gets even worse. Listen to this.
No.
Rep. Will, I can't pronounce it. He's similarly denying the existence of transgender kids, describing the bill as pretty simple. He explained, if you're a boy, you go to the boys' room. If you're a girl, you go to the girls' room. Then he proceeded to insist that if you're one of those unfortunate people who don't really know, you have to use a separate restroom. He didn't explain what makes them unfortunate, nor did he address the transgender kids who do really know what they are. In perhaps the most shocking and most widely reported comments, they praised the bill because it's about protecting our children. In a comment that elicited audible gasps from the audience, he said, I'm sorry if you're so twisted, you don't know who you are. A lot of people are, and I'm telling you right now, it's about protecting the kids. Implying that transgender people are mentally ill, they're treating the wrong part of the anatomy, and they have to be treating it up here, and gesture to his head.
That's nuts.
That's insane.
I've had enough of that. I can't listen
to
that.
I'm out.
I don't think we should give him airplay.
I don't think so either.
But I mean, this is the kind of thing that's going on over there, and I think is quite appropriate for what we're getting into now today.
So I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about that a little bit more. We're going to play some short messages, and we're going to have a song, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to start to talk about trans kids a little bit more. You are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
We got a message come through here.
We've got a message.
All right. So the message we have is, the only issue is the mother. We want kids to be well-rounded global citizens who are accepting and understanding. Let's start teaching kids about all the representatives of the world. Hats off to the Safe School Coalition and all the awesome education staff involved in breaking down barriers and keeping kids safe. Yay.
That's good. Oh, okay. Hang on. You've got an applause. Thank you so much for that lovely message. That's good.
Well, now, like I said, we're carrying on from our back-to-school segment.
We are.
We have our guests tonight.
Yeah, so we do have Dr. Michelle Telfer and also Sally Nichols, which are two very amazing people who... Sally's actually shaking her head going, no. Yes, you are.
You are. You both are amazing women.
But look...
Well, we feel privileged to be here.
Yeah,
well,
sure.
Well, we're privileged to have you here, so thank you so much. Look, Michelle, I want to probably talk to you first, and not Michelle.
I know.
Dr. Michelle. So we'll call you Dr. Michelle. So, Dr. Michelle, I wanted to start to get a bit of an idea as to the development of a child, because obviously you start off at pre-puberty, and then you obviously go through puberty, and that's really when a lot of the secondary sexual characteristics start to develop in a child. How does that actually happen, and what are the different respective stages as to how that happens? And maybe we can start to talk about some other things after that.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Megan. Well, really what happens is pretty variable between individuals. So some young children from the age of about 8 or 9 can start to see changes in their body, and obviously that differs whether you're a biological boy or biological girl. But the first thing that seems to happen in biological girls is that you develop breast buds, and in biological boy bodies they tend to have an increase in size of their testicles as the first sign. And from there, the changes happen gradually over a number of years until some year, 18 months after an initial onset of puberty. In the biological males, their voices can deepen, and as we know, in biological females, breasts develop to their kind of end shape and size when they're in mid-adolescence. So it takes a long time. Some people go through it really quickly. Others it takes many years. But they're the processes.
And I understand they're called Tanner stages. Is that correct?
That's right. So we go from Tanner stage 1, which is pre-puberty, up to a final adult stage, which is Tanner stage 5.
Okay. And that's obviously through the release of hormones that are secreted in the body by the gonads, which go and make those changes happen. Is that pretty much right at a high level?
Yeah, well, it starts off with the hypothalamus. That's a gland in the brain, and that starts to secrete something called gonadotropin-releasing hormone. And it releases it in a pulsatile manner, and that releases this hormone into the bloodstream. It goes to the pituitary, which is another gland in the brain that produces other hormones, and then those hormones go down to the gonads. So the whole body is involved. It's called an axis that goes from the brain to the gonads.
So it's a multi-stage process actually happening with the whole brain. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, so everyone understands that this is basically the heavier end of our segment of this return to school thing, talking about the kids and hormones. And it may get a bit technical, but it's just to give you an understanding of what actually is involved and why it's so important to cover it. So.
So when we talk about hormone therapy for trans kids, obviously they've come along and they've been diagnosed as being as having gender dysphoria. And obviously the decision what's appropriate for that child is for that child to transition. So how do we work with the different respective stages of blocking and stopping puberty altogether and then starting to think about hormone therapy and those kinds of things?
Well maybe a step back here.
Yep.
And when we're talking about those things like the breast budding and things like that, that people have to understand that when a child is dealing with gender dysphoria and they start seeing those breast buds, or they start feeling and seeing those changes, that's where that stress comes in. And that's where that you see a young girl who identifies as transgender as a boy, but sees these breast buds. She basically starts having, oh my God, what's going on? Why is my body going this way? They don't identify as a female. Same thing as a male when things are growing and developing. They don't identify as a male and they start having stress from those characteristics.
So that's a different psychological issue that you have with those children?
Yeah. So when, Shel, you're right, when we see young children go into puberty who identify as trans or gender diverse, the level of anxiety and distress increases in a manner that needs urgent attention.
Could you explain, maybe just, you don't have to give names or anything like that, but say maybe a light case, just to give an example of what a light case would be, maybe what an extreme case would be of a child who deals with these issues of dysphoria, like not being able to see their body, hiding their body to... I'm trying to think of...
To something pretty extreme.
To give more of, more of an example, paint a picture to people, the extreme cases you see that come towards you for dealing with this.
Yeah, so we do see some extreme cases, and the disgust that people feel sometimes towards their own body is pronounced, and it's kind of a reflection of their body changing in a way that they really don't want it to. And we see young people who try and harm themselves by cutting parts of their body or trying to change their body by doing themselves harm to minimise those changes. But what we're really fortunate enough to have is this fantastic treatment essentially that blocks puberty. So there's a hormone, this gonadotropin-releasing hormone, sorry about using the medical terms, but we have a medication that blocks that hormone and it stops that axis in the body from working. So instead of having to experience that terrible distress that goes with the body changing, we can administer this hormone or this drug and it stops the body from progressing in that way. So their brains still develop, they develop emotionally and cognitively and they keep growing taller and all of those normal things that would happen in puberty, but they don't develop these secondary sexual characteristics and that just makes everything much easier for them.
And this is completely reversible?
Totally reversible. So we're fortunate we've been using these drugs in children for many, many years. There's another condition that we use them for. And so we've been using them for a long time. We know they're really safe. There are very, very few side effects that we experience. And if you stop them, then your body just reverts back to how it would have been should you have never started taking them. So they don't affect... they don't affect your fertility or any other part of your body at all.
Now, at what age would you, how would you assess a child and at what age would you say start giving these drugs to them?
Yeah, so we we always wait until someone has just gone into puberty. Mm-hmm. So that might be a really small change, but some kids are so anxious about their body changing at all that even the slightest change can be enough for us to feel that this is in the best interests of the child. And obviously they've gone through a big assessment prior to that with the mental health people, mm-hmm. with a paediatrician such as myself, and we have a number of discussions about long-term issues with regards to pros and cons of having this treatment. The puberty blockers are started at variable ages. So for some young people, they've gone into puberty at age 10, and we've needed to start it then because that's been the right time for them. Others haven't started puberty until 12 or a bit later, and that's the time for that young person.
So we're going to talk probably about some more of that a little bit in a moment, actually, because you mentioned one magic word, which was in the best interests of the child, and then we start to talk about some other things. So we're going to talk about that very shortly. We're going to play some quick messages, and then we're going to play a track, and we're going to come back and talk more about best interests of the child and those kinds of things. So you are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
My name is Mish with my co-host Megan. Now, we are talking stage one, stage two, hormones, hormone therapy, children, Royal Children's Hospital, pretty heavy topic. Now, to recap, what we just talked about was stage one hormone treatment, and which is more around blockers. And people have to understand that these young children have heavy distress and around their body going through the secondary
the development of the secondary sexual characteristics, yeah. through puberty.
Yes. Now, we're talking stage two now. Mm. And Michelle, if you want to, feel free to take us from there.
Yeah, thanks. So stage two treatment often gets started around age 15 or 16 here in Australia, earlier overseas in a number of countries. And what stage two treatment is essentially hormone treatment that is gender affirming. So if you identify as female, then you'd start estrogen treatment. And if you identified as male, then you'd start testosterone. So some of the hormone changes that the body will go through after starting these hormones are irreversible. So that means, for example, that if you're taking estrogen, you will develop breasts. And with breast development, you can't undo those changes unless you have surgery. And same with changes from testosterone, in that it will change the shape of your jaw and deepen your voice and those things also.
Now, there's a bit of technicality around all of this. And this is why Sally Nichols is here with us to also help part of this discussion now, too, and the issues around the stage two hormone treatment, right?
Yes, that's right. So if any of our patients want to start on stage two hormones, they need to go to the Family Court of Australia to have that permission granted. And this occurs even if the young person feels that it's what they want, if the parents are both on board with this treatment being in the best interests of their child, and if the medical specialists from our service or any other gender service in Australia agrees with the family. So we still have to go to court.
Why do you have to go to court if it's in the best interest of the child? Where, you know, you said before, in the best interest of the child was to block puberty. Why is it suddenly different? Selling?
Well, it's quite unique. We were discussing before that there's been internationally, we're considered quite interventionist, and that's quite disappointing for the children and for the families, and I'm sure for the medical profession, who are so compassionate and have the children's best interest at heart. And you can tell that the court is also struggling with the area as well. There's some reluctance in the judgments, and particularly the most recent full court judgment of Ree Jamie, where the Chief Justice actually expressed concern, but was bound by previous case law, that even if a child is found to be GILLIC competent, which is the name, the medical term, or the case that actually establishes competency by the medical practitioners, and the court actually agreed that it's a medical decision. They need to endorse it. They need to review the evidence and ensure that that child's competent. But there needs to be a change, we think, in the legislation to actually overcome previous case law.
So just to clarify, GILLIC competency means that a child is able to make informed consent?
Yes, and really understands the nature, for example, of the irreversible nature would be a good example of the treatment that they're receiving and what the consequences are, that they're mature enough to really understand. And if that's the case, no further investigation really needs to be made by the court. However, the court needs to endorse that medical opinion at the moment with the current case law.
It kind of sounds pretty excessive for a family to go through.
It is, and we've really tried hard for a long time to mitigate the length of the trials. I think at the moment we are constricted by the protocols and the rules that relate to special medical procedure. But, for example, what we've tried to argue successfully now on a number of occasions is that if a child is actually found to be GILLIC competent in all the relevant materials before the court, then there should just be one hearing, because there was a stage there where cases were actually going to three or four hearings for the evidence to be considered, particularly before Jamie. So we've actually, we hope now that if all the evidence is in front of the court, the matters can be actually heard just in one hearing.
Now, this also can be quite an expensive exercise, can't it?
Yes.
And what could some families be looking to out of pocket?
Look, if they were to pay normal rates, it would be thousands of dollars. Mm. However, what we're really committed to, and we would like to work with the hospital and other sort of similar practitioners who have the same ethics and values, is to make sure that it can be actually done on a pro bono basis, because at the moment the kids are forced and compelled by the law to do this, and it does seem unfair. So we're hoping to try and gather around like-minded professionals who would actually be happy to do it on a pro bono basis, whatever the means of the parents involved.
Yeah, and I'd just like to back up some of Sally's comments about the comments we're getting back from the judges in the family court, that they are increasingly feeling like there isn't really a role for them in these decisions. And just back in December, just before Christmas, on the 23rd, there was a case heard in the family court in Victoria where Justice Bennett made some striking comments at the end about how going to court itself had caused great distress for the family, for the young person involved, and also made comments on the fact that there are a lot of resources put into their pro bono representation, and also the evidence prepared by the doctors at the hospital. This wasn't one of my patients, but certainly the other two doctors who had to write the extensive reports, which we do obviously as for free. But the judge was making comments on this, which is the first time a judge has actually been very explicit in one of the judgments. And we're certainly progressing towards, hopefully, a time where we don't need the court at all.
Mm. And to really sort of summarise, you listen to some of the news articles we listen to about a mom getting upset about a child going into a toilet that they identify with. People have to understand the amount of things that are going on behind the scenes, the weight these children are going into Royal Children's, the distress that they're under. They're uncomfortable with their bodies, the way the bodies are developing. They identify with who they are. This isn't a sexual thing. This is an identity thing. The family's already basically forking out thousands to go to the court to go and get the child the right care that they need. And these parents are actually throwing a fit because they don't understand that their child needs to be in the right space themselves.
It is amazing, actually, to be able to meet the children. Mm. And obviously, it is a privilege and it's quite humbling. But also the relief on the child's face when they actually know, the shoulders go down, that we will get through this, we'll do it, and it will be fine, and they'll be able to get through the process, to give the child that relief and that support. So some of them have actually felt quite vindicated that there is a process, at least, to recognise them in that way.
Mm. Michelle, you spoke before about the family court, about the judges having to make decisions. You're quite well known in terms of the Royal Children's Hospital having a number of cases, and your caseload growing exponentially. When you look at how that's going to translate in terms of all the families which are having to present to court in order to have access to Stage 2, that's a huge load on the court itself and also on the whole legal system.
Absolutely. We had 170 new referrals to the Royal Children's last year, and the year before that we had more than 100 as well. And the research that's come out of New Zealand is suggestive that 1.2% of the population identifies as transgender. So potentially the court could be looking at a huge number of cases coming forward if this situation doesn't change. And given that the court feels that it's unnecessary, the doctors feel it's unnecessary, and the community doesn't want it, we really need to make a change to get this out of the system.
And it's also the stress on the children, also the family as well.
Oh, and that's number one. The distress put on young people going to court is enormous. And you can imagine most people think about having to go to court as a time when something's gone wrong or they've done something wrong. So think of these poor transgender young people who are going to court and having to answer questions about something as fundamental as who they are.
Exactly.
That's crazy stuff.
Now, you know, because I love being able to have a platform like this to be able to go and show people the other side of all of these issues that are going on. We will be back shortly. We have a few messages for you, and we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
You are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
This evening, we have been talking about stage one, stage two hormone treatment with our guest, Dr. Michelle Telfer, and our other guest, Sally Nichols. Now, if you do have any questions or you do want to send any messages through, you can SMS us at 0427-JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
But do it very quickly.
Do it very quickly. We're running into the end of the show here soon. Mm. Now, ladies.
Well, I was going to say, we had a message which came through, and I want to read some of the messages. So, thanks very much for this great discussion. My trans daughter is 9, and we're seeking the gender clinic in Queensland in about 2 months. Can Dr. Telfer tell us if the puberty blockers will hold off any signs of puberty until cross-sex hormone therapy can start?
Absolutely. So 9's a great time to access a gender service to start the assessment process. Because puberty's likely to kick in between 10 and 12, and that would give time for people to do the right assessments and then to start off on puberty blockers.
Is there one? How many clinics are there in Queensland, do you know? Is there one or two?
There's some great doctors up in Queensland.
Yep.
Yeah, some fantastic child and adolescent psychiatrists and some paediatricians who work together, and an endocrinologist, actually, so they've got a really good service there.
Good stuff.
Now, the next message we have is telling a transgender person they need to go to court for hormones is telling them that they have done something wrong. There is nothing wrong with being transgender. Why are we treating these adolescents like criminals? It's flat-out discrimination.
It does almost sound like flat-out discrimination. Look, how can we change the situation? How can we make things easier for kids?
Yeah. Now, Australia is the only jurisdiction where this exists.
I don't think it's the only jurisdiction, but it's one of the only jurisdictions. Mm. And but Michelle, you might want to comment on what's happening or what's in the
I think it is discrimination. I think it's as plain and simple as that. And I think we need to get all of these medical decisions out of the court system. And fortunately, we have a number of people who are working with us to make that happen. We first started talking about it after the case of Jamie. So this was a very important case where a decision was handed down in 2013. And at the Royal Children's Hospital, we're obviously not lawyers, but we genuinely thought that this was going to get everything out of the courts, and we held all our hopes on the outcome of this full bench of the family court decision. But unfortunately, the decision was made to keep stage two treatment in the courts.
I think they were bound by a case called Marion, and I've actually had to take, I'm happy to take transgender kids through Marion and explain that unfortunately they're bound by case law that has developed this way, but it is unfair and it is wrong, and the general consensus at a lot of the children's rights conferences we attend is to actually get rid of it, and there's a lot of support in to do that.
Now, remarrying, that set the precedent, was it, for special medical procedures?
Yes, so we've got a hierarchy of courts, so we're bound, for example, by a higher court. So what's frustrating is it might be that single judges make decisions and they give us a guidance, but that we're not bound by a single judgment. We're bound by our higher courts, like the full court in Jamie. So that's why Michelle's absolutely right. We're all waiting for this test case, in inverted commas, to try and distinguish it from Marion. But Marion is a high court case, and it wasn't per se. So
what happened in Remarion case?
Well, in Marion, there was a spate, and it was addressing a spate of girls in particular who had suffered from certain mental impairment. They couldn't make their own decisions, so they weren't GILLIC competent, and their parents were often performing hysterectomies on these girls without a review of the consequences on that person's right to have a right to fertility and to have a family despite an impairment. And so the court started talking about treatment that was irreversible, particularly that might impact on a child's minor's fertility in the future. It was that type of treatment is outside parental consent itself, and that there needs to be an independent assessment when fertility is impacted upon. And that has then translated down to the treatment of transgender kids, like stage two, where there'll be an irreversible impact on a child's fertility.
So also that treatment itself really served no therapeutic benefit for the child. How does it relate to other treatments which are done to children, which once again have no therapeutic impact, such as, say, male circumcision?
Look, I think the use of Marion has been extraordinary.
Could have been distinguished.
Yes, because the Marion's case has so little to do with the decisions that are made around transgender children that I think it's, yeah, as I said, it's extraordinary, and I really don't understand how we're in this situation now where we're continuing to be bound by this case. But the courts have really struggled, as Sally said, because of the way it's set up with a hierarchy of court systems. The courts have struggled to remove Marion, mm-hmm. yeah, from these decisions.
Well, how do we fix things? How do we make it
work? So really interestingly, one of the judges who was on the full bench of the family court in the Jamie case has just written a paper about how, because of the court structure, it is going to be very, very unlikely the court can change it. Therefore, there's a need for federal politicians to write a bill that gets passed in Parliament or in some other way legislate to remove this from the court system. And that's where our advocacy work is headed at the moment. So we've been advocating for this change with the federal politicians. We've had a lot of interest from the Office of the Attorney General, George Brandis, also interest from the Shadow Attorney General, Mark Dreyfus. We're also meeting with a number of federal ministers in Canberra in a couple of weeks' time, hoping to get support that they will write the necessary changes in the legislation and have this whole process resolved.
So it's almost like a watch this space kind of situation.
Yeah, definitely.
Look, I think we've made a lot of progress and it's really exciting. And if we can have this change come through, it will make such a difference to the trans community and how adolescents see themselves and how families approach the difficult decisions that come with transitioning socially and then medically.
Because it really is such a big ball game.
Huge.
Huge. Look, Sally and Michelle, Dr. Michelle, I should say, thank you so much for coming in tonight. We've really appreciated what you've said, and also we really think a lot of the questions and comments which have also come through as well, we really have appreciated. I think tonight's really quite important with, obviously, trans kids.
And as soon as we can, we'll definitely get the podcast up and sharing out to the public as well. For those who have missed the show, or even if you wanted to share this conversation with the greater audience through your own Facebook page or through Twitter or whatever, just so that people have a better education around the situation.
Absolutely. You are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
Mingzi, it is that time again.
It is the end of the show, unfortunately. We've had an amazing show tonight. So we really do thank, once again, Dr. Michelle and also Sally for coming through and having a bit of a chat with us tonight.
I don't want it to end. I know.
Well, we're going to give you this.
There you go.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm sure everybody who's sending through messages now would agree with that clap as well. And if you do have any, if you want to continue your messages, please feel free to go to our Facebook page, post them there, Transpositions on Joy. We will be posting the podcast there as well. If you did miss this show or any of the other shows along our segment, we will be getting them posted up shortly. There has been a bit of a backlog, so you can get us on joy.org.au/transpositions.
Or you can also Facebook, facebook.com/transpositionsonjoy. If you like listening to us, click like on our show. We would like to get as many likes as what we possibly can.
You can also go to the podcast app on the Apple Store on your device and actually download the show as well and listen to our regular updated subscribed podcasts as they come through if there's anything you missed.
Absolutely. I'm going to take you out with a nice little track by Karen and the Kids and All Is Love. You are listening to Transpositions.
Talk to you next week.
Join 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.